Broadcasting in the House Chamber, Legislative Day 151.
House will come to order. Members will take their seats. Visitors retire from the chamber. The sergeant-at-arms will close the door. Members and guests are asked to please silence all electronic devices. This afternoon's prayer will be offered by Representative Abe Jones. We'd ask everybody to silence your electronic devices. Ask everyone to stand for the prayer and also to remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance following the prayer. Representative Jones.
As we're apt to say in here, I just want to take a moment, just a second, and say I appreciate everybody who has expressed their sympathy to me in the death of my brother. It has touched my heart. I know I'm loved, and I thank you very, very much. Just before, I'm going to read from Psalms 121, which is my favorite psalm. I will lift up mine eyes unto the hills from whence cometh my help. My help cometh from the Lord, which made heaven and earth. He will not suffer thy foot to be moved. He that keepeth thee will not slumber. Behold, he that keepeth Israel shall neither slumber nor sleep. The Lord is my keeper. The Lord is thy shade upon thy right hand, and the sun shall not smite thee by day, nor the moon by night. The Lord shall preserve thee from all evil. He shall preserve thy soul. The Lord shall preserve thy going out and thy coming in from this time forth, even forevermore. Let us pray. Heavenly Father, we turn to you this morning and ask that you give us mercy and give us peace and give us insight to do what we have to do. And Lord, please help us beyond what we're doing here to know that we have the duty to love you with all our heart and soul and strength and to love one another despite any differences, that we're all brothers and sisters in your sight and that we need to show the love. And as I ask in your holy name, amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The gentleman from Gaston, Representative Hastings, is recognized for motion.
Mr. Speaker, the journal for November 1st has been examined and found to be correct. I move that it be approved as written.
Representative Hastings moves that the journal for November 1st be approved as written. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it, and the journal is approved as written. Messages from the governor. The clerk will read.
Roy Cooper, Governor, State of North Carolina. Governor Roy Cooper's objections and veto message. House Bill 264, an act to clarify the expiration of a statewide state of emergency and to exercise certain powers under the statewide state of emergency to clarify the abatement of statewide imminent hazards and to clarify statewide quarantines. North Carolina is emerging from a global pandemic with lives saved and a strong economy because of effective statewide measures protect public under the Emergency Management Act. Critical decisions about stopping deadly diseases and responding to any other emergency should stay with the experts in public health and safety, not the Committee on Partisan Politicians. We must be able to act quickly and fairly in deadly diseases, hurricanes, or other dangers threatening people's lives and jobs. An emergency needs decisive, quick, and comprehensive action, not bureaucracy in politics. Therefore, I veto the bill, Roy Cooper, Governor. The bill, having been vetoed, is returned to the clerk of North Carolina House of Representatives on this day, the 1st of November, 2021, at 7:37 p.m. for reconsideration by that body.
Noted. Bill is referred to the Committee on Rules, Calendar, and Operations of the House. Members, shortly we are going to take a recess. There's an amendment being prepared. Chair believes it may be like renumbering the districts or something along their lines. I think it's what it is. So there's an amendment being prepared that's going to take some time for staff to get that ready. So that'll be the we're going to have to take a recess to allow for that to be done. The committee chair informs me that if we were to recess for an hour, that should give the central staff time to draw up that amendment. In the interim, I would ask all of the finance chairs please approach the dais for a moment. And Representative Warren's recognized to send forth the conference report. Clerk will read.
House Bill 404. The conferees appointed to resolve the difference between the Senate and the House of Representatives on House Bill 404, a bill to be entitled an act providing that public safety, answering points, regional public safety, answering points, and other employees and agents employed of the law enforcement agencies are not liable for damage in the civil action exception cases for renting or fulfilled misconduct. Senate Judiciary Committee substitute adopt 62921. Submit the following report. The House and the Senate agree on the following amendment to the Senate Judiciary Committee adopt 62921, and the House concurs in the Senate Committee substitute to amend it. Date conferees approved report November 2nd, 2021. Conference for the Senate. Norman Sanders, Senator Norman Sanders is chair. Senators Newton and Davis. Conference for the House of Representatives. Representative Warren, chair. Representative Sarah Stevens. And Representative Lee Zachary.
Counter percent rule 36B. Members, this bill, this is House Bill 104. This is a conference report. Chair's just going to say, put it just state calendar. We may add it to today's calendar. The chair does not know if there's any controversy. It does appear that it's a bipartisan bill, but just ask, I don't know if Representative Reese is on the floor. If someone on the Democratic side, it's House Bill 404. If anybody wants to take a look at it, Representative Bell, if anyone wants to take a look out on our side, we may add it to the calendar if parties are fine with it. Also, the chair wants to give notice of another bill that is not being that is not before the body that we're going to try to take up today. What it is, there's a tax that's going to go into effect on January 1 for unemployment insurance, and unless we move to prevent that tax increase from going. It's one of those triggered things based on the unemployment rate. And there's a notice that would go out by statute November 15th. And so you may have a situation where employers would potentially go ahead and pay that tax if we don't do something on that before that date. So we're up against some, because it's a two-day bill, we're up against some timelines on that. So the chair will be coming back probably to add that on later today. And so on the Democratic side, Representative Ray is aware of it. And I think it's something that probably will, I don't know if there'll be any controversy over that. But just members, be alert. We'll keep folks informed of it when we get that bill together. For what purpose, lay from wait, Representative Adcock rise.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Would you please repeat the bill number on the bill that you said will like the conference report that will likely be added to the calendar?
It's 404. I'll tell you what, we'll do this. I'm going to go ahead and add it to the calendar, and if there's a problem with it, we'll pull it off. But that way it's on the dashboard, and everybody can look at it. So,
thank you very much.
Without objection, day's calendar. So ordered. If members, if there's objection to it, we'll deal with it then. I'll give folks a chance to vote. If folks want to take it off the calendar, that's fine. It only takes simple leave of the House anyway to do it. But that way it's out there, and folks get a chance to read over it.
Thank you.
The House will come back to order. Members, the chair appreciates the members' indulgence. Simply wanted to inform the minority leader of what we had announced earlier on this as well. So the plan is going to be we're going to recess until 3 o'clock, and that's going to give staff time to prepare the amendments. The chair's informed there's an amendment, again, that simply tries to address the numbering of the districts. And I think Representative Reeves said there may be, I think, two amendments from the Democratic side. The chair knows of no other amendments from the Republican side of the aisle at this point. And so that'll give time. In the event that we conclude the debate on the second reading and we can go ahead and proceed to a vote, what we will do is hold off on the third reading if that amendment's not here until that amendment's on the floor, and then we'll just run that amendment on the renumbering on third reading. That way, I think that's the best use of time for folks, and we're not waiting around unnecessarily, and we can allow the session to flow forward. And again, as I announced earlier, we're working on that finance bill, and that will, so members we may have to, actually today would simply be the first reading, so the second reading would be tomorrow, and the third reading would be the next day, so, because it is a roll call bill. So that'll be the, order of the day at this point, and when we come back after the, at the recess at 3 o'clock, if 404 looks like it's gonna be something really quick, we may go ahead and take care of that. If not, then we'll get to it when we get to it, and we'll go ahead and immediately get into 976. Notices or announcements. For what purpose? The gentleman from Wayne, Majority Leader, Representative Bell, rise.
For an announcement.
The gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Republicans, we will caucus immediately after when we go into recess in 1228. Thank you.
For what purpose? The gentleman from Caldwell, Representative Hall, rise.
For an announcement.
The gentleman has the floor.
Members of the House Redistricting Committee, we're not going to meet tonight after session. We were hoping to be able to take up the a congressional map that was being sent over from the Senate, but it's not going to come until later on this evening, and so I'm sure everyone's heartbroken that we won't be over there tonight until 9 or 10 o'clock again. The committee room will be open, though, if you want to go over there and sit and hang out and relive last night. So watch your inbox. We'll have a committee meeting at some point tomorrow. I don't know what time yet, but we'll send out an email.
Any further notices or announcements? Seeing none, the chair is going to declare the House standing in recess, subject to the standard stipulations in Rule 15.1, until 3 o'clock p.m.
Representatives of Senate Bill 183, a bill to be entitled an act to eliminate the mandatory waiting period for driver's license restoration limited driving privileges if the person operating the motor vehicle has a functioning ignition interlock system installed into it, and to study whether to expand the use of ignition interlock systems after committee substitute favorable 62221, fourth edition engross 92921, submit the following. The conferees recommend that the Senate and House of Representatives adopt this report. Date conferees approve the report November 2nd, 2021. Conferees for the Senate, Senator Britt, Chair, Senator Daniels. Conferees for the House of Representatives, Representative Jones, Chair, Representative Stevens, and Richardson.
Calendar. Chair will determine later if it'll be added to today's calendar, or what we could do is load it up on there, and if somebody wants to make a motion, remove it, the chair will take it. What's that bill number again so I can read that back to the members?
Senate Bill 183.
This is Senate Bill 183. This was a conference report. This was the interlock bill. Worked out the differences. The chairs for the Senate were, or the conferees of the Senate were Senator Britt, Senator Daniel, the House conferees are Brendan Jones, Sarah Stevens, and Billy Richardson. So we may be able to dispose of this today. This is what I'll do. I'll go ahead and put it on the, so chair, go ahead and add it to the calendar, and if somebody wants to make a motion, remove from the calendar, chair will take it. So without objection, today's calendar, so ordered. That way it's on the dashboard, and members can look that over. We'll go back at these momentarily. The House will come back to order. For what purpose, gentlemen from Chatham, Representative Reeves, rise.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To address the earlier bill that we had discussed on 183, and I think that what a couple of the members of the caucus are asking, if we could move that to tomorrow's calendar just to review some of the changes, we'd appreciate that.
Is that 183 or 404?
No, 183 is the one. Yeah, it was 183. 404, we're fine.
The 404, the immunity bill?
Yes.
Okay, sure. Chair will, Mr. Clerk, Chair is going to direct the House Bill 404 be removed from today's calendar.
We were saying 404 is okay. 183 is the one that they were asking be put on tomorrow's calendar. The Senate bill.
If Jim would approach us.
All right.
Staff's going to be permitted on the floor for the bill. Chair's going to do this. Chair's had two questions on 404 and 183. So, Mr. Clerk, members, Chair's going to direct that both of those bills be removed from today's calendar, calendar for tomorrow. Members, just for your, just to let you know where we are on the UI tax issue, we should be receiving a non-concurrence vote and a message from the Senate on House Bill 311. Senate Bill 311. And so when that comes in, we're going to appoint conferees to that bill, and that'll be the bill that's used as the vehicle for the UI fix. There was a provision that Representative McNeil had on there. I think they're going to add the UI provision to that. The reason we're going to do that is we were going down a road where if we did a separate bill and required the Senate to concur, it would require ultimately 5 days to get it done. This way we can get it done this week and be finished with it. So we are coming up against that November deadline, so Chair thinks that's the most efficient way to do this and appreciate the members working on that. So with that, let's move to House Bill 976. The clerk will read.
Representative Destin Hall, House Bill 976, a bill to be entitled an act to realign North Carolina House of Representatives districts following the return of the 2020 federal decennial census. General Assembly of North Carolina acts.
Gentleman from Caldwell, Representative Hall is recognized to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members, we've embarked on the most transparent redistricting process in North Carolina history. Every part of this map-making process was done in public and was recorded and archived for anyone who would like to go see how the maps were drawn. Not only was it the most transparent process in the history of this state, but for the first time in North Carolina history, the legislature adopted a process on our own volition that did not include the use of political data. The first time that has ever happened on our own volition. Further, we received a great amount of public input on the maps, which has resulted in a North Carolina House map that reflects weeks of public comment, both in person and online. The committee has been open since October 6th, Monday through Friday, from 9 a.m. until 5 p.m. Despite that, I was disappointed to see very few of my Democratic colleagues participate the way that they did in 2019. For those of you who are here, you remember that in many of the groupings that we drew, you had Democrats and Republicans standing there at the computer screen drawing. The room remained open for weeks this time around. I was also disappointed that not a single Democratic member put forth a map to be considered by the public, despite the fact that some of our colleagues in some of the Senate Democrats putting forth several proposals for public comment in their chamber. If you, upon further reflection of the entire redistricting process, The rural areas of North Carolina have lost an immense amount of population in the last decade, which has resulted in wholesale change to some districts and some areas. But many of the groupings didn't change, or they remained similar to the previous decade. And given that there was so much litigation with respect to those maps, I took advantage of many of the court cases that we had over the course of the decade that had previously dictated to the General Assembly how to draw these maps. That may not be, it's not applicable in all cases, however, but where applicable, I made every effort to keep current districts intact, and I will, of course, encourage a negative vote on any amendment that doesn't seek to do that. I'm going to begin my presentation of the proposed map by going through the criteria that the House Redistricting Committee adopted and how the proposed map that you see before you complies with that criteria. The first criteria was keeping counties whole. Within this map, where counties could be kept whole, they are. We kept every county whole that we could, for example, Chatham County, Lee County, and Polk County. We tried not to split VTDs. In 2011, when this process was performed by a consultant, and again, not out in the open, you saw hundreds of VTD splits across this map. In my proposal, there were only 7 total VTD splits across the entire state of North Carolina. Again, formerly there were hundreds. There are 7 total VTD splits in this map. We honored municipal boundaries. I made every effort to keep municipalities whole throughout the draw. The report that you'll see says that there are 82 municipality splits, but the bulk of the splits that you see in the report either have no population or extraordinarily small populations. Contiguity. Every district in this map, of course, is contiguous. We considered incumbency, and in this map, the bare minimum of members were double bumped. We looked at compactness. Despite not being drawn by a computer algorithm, this map contains the compactness of the current map that we are currently sitting here under today. Despite not having that advantage of a computer algorithm, and despite essentially drawing the thing by hand, so to speak, in that committee room live where everyone could see. We did not consider race, and I did not consider race in I did not consider racial data in drawing this map. We did not consider political data, and I did not consider political data in drawing this map. The other important thing to remember in this map is the way that this thing used to be done is through both parties. Some consultant would be hired in the outside, and they would draw a map, and they'd bring it in, and that would be voted on. But this time around, we undertook a different process, a transparent process. And that process included a room being open and any member who wanted to going and drawing districts within that room, and that's what I did. I went in there armed with essentially just the criteria that we had and tried to draw districts as best I could that fit that criteria. Given that I didn't have a computer-based algorithm or consultants using that algorithm, the final product that you see before you today has resulted in what I believe to be an impressive map that splits very few precincts, keeps municipalities whole, and creates compact districts. Members, I hope that you will support this map, and I hope that you will all acknowledge the truly historic nature of the process that we have seen this time around, the unprecedented transparency and the unprecedented decision to not use political data in drawing these maps, and I hope you will vote yes on this map.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Chatham, Representative Freeves, rise?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and that's the debate to Bill.
Chairman has the floor.
And thank you, and I appreciate the work that's gone in. Obviously, anytime we have to create a bill such as this, I would probably have a little bit of pushback in the sense that one of the things, and not a talent, I would say, that I have, but one of the abilities that I've been able to hold on to since I've gotten here is I've gotten an uncanny ability to count. And because of that ability to count, I know there are certain realities about the drawing of maps. and the presenting of maps and things of that sort. I know that a lot of my colleagues recognize the reality of putting forth 51 maps and where that might go, because obviously we can't pass a set of maps by ourselves. So I would just say to the chairman's comments, it was not a lack of interest at all that nobody was drawing maps, but trying to be realistic about the process and trying to be efficient about a process is what we've done. Secondly, for those who saw, I know at least I and a couple of others did put maps into certain areas. There are certain groupings that are going to be what they're going to be. There are certain groupings that there are some discussions about and decisions to be made. And so that would take me to where we are on this bill. And I'll be asking that you consider voting no on this for several reasons. And again, this is not about people, personalities, districts, or anything of that sort, but this has been something that I've discussed since we've gotten here when it comes down to redistricting. I do wish we can move closer and closer to an impartial process, closer and closer to a situation where none of us are doing anything that influences these maps or anything of that sort, but that's not where we are right now. So I would go with the criteria that we had. Even though we've split fewer municipalities in 2011, we still could have split fewer municipalities than we did, and I've drawn some amendments and drawn some maps that show those opportunities. And even though we split fewer VTDs this time than 2011, we could have split even fewer VTDs according to what we wanted to do. We definitely had an opportunity to draw more compact districts. For those of you who were on the redistricting committee or kept up with the meeting last night, you saw those opportunities. There were plenty of places where the districts could be even more compact than what is being presented to us today. And if compactness is something we care about, we have that opportunity to be more compact. We talked a lot last night about trying to make as few changes as possible, and that really isn't the goal of the criteria we set. The goal of the criteria we set was to try to draw a map that fit the criteria. And because, if you remember from the redraws that we've had to do, those have been court-ordered redraws. But they're still using maps that at some point in time by some court were deemed to be bad maps. And so then we're using the skeletons of those maps to create new. And really, a lot of these times, what we needed to do is to start from scratch, create new districts out of these new groupings. We've grown exponentially since 2010 census and the 2011 maps, and this was an opportunity to show that we've had that growth. You look at counties like Pitt, Buncombe, Cumberland. Again, if we're saying we're just going to make a few changes, those are areas we made a lot of changes. Buncombe looks nothing like it looked even in the last redraw. Why that is, I can't tell you. I don't know. But again, we had opportunities not to do it in that way. Because one of the things we're going to need to do when these maps are done, we can vote on any bill and we can pass any bill. And frankly, we understand as the majority caucus, you can pass any bill you want at any point in time. But ultimately, with something this expansive, with this kind of effect, this is the next 10 years of this state that we're dealing with. Ultimately, we should want, desire, seek the approval of the people that we serve. Not in the sense of making sure that their party gets to stay in any particular area, but in the sense of them feeling like that they had a fair shot, good maps, good representation all around, because this isn't just about who stays in power over the next 10 years. This is about so many issues that touch so many of us. This is about the segregation of our society at this point. The farther we move districts into these type of hovels, and the more that we set up our walls, and the more that we set up in our particular areas, the more we're separating each other out. That doesn't do really. What you actually want is to try to figure out ways, which maps give you a unique opportunity to do it, to try to get more people that have local commonalities, but maybe don't spend the time together and maybe aren't around each other for different issues. I don't think we are served better when politics gets infused into every moment of our life. And we don't want people thinking that these maps bake that in. So that's another missed opportunity that we have. We've already had people, and even though we didn't use any partisan data looking at this map, obviously groups have looked at this. They've looked at the map that we're presenting, and we're already getting told from people throughout the country that, again, ranking us compared to other states, and there are other red states, there are other blue states, there are other purple states. So this isn't about picking on any particular group or anything of that sort, but ranking us even to similarly situated states that we seem to be going back down the path of partisan gerrymandering. So when we see that and we have that analysis, we've got an opportunity to correct it. So let's correct it. We have a fundamental difference in our belief in how we're interpreting what the law says we should be doing right now. And there is some up in the air. But one of the things that we feel is clear, for instance, looking at the Stevenson decision, is how we handle race. I do not believe, and I think a lot of people who are at least on this side of the aisle don't believe, that any of the decisions said that you can't contemplate race. Because the reality is, at this point in time and at this stage in our history, race is there. That doesn't mean I'm racist, you're racist, voters are racist, but it means that race is a factor that we've got to consider in order to make more fair districts. So if we don't look at race at all, then the risk we run is falling afoul of the Stevenson decision, where the Stevenson decision says that we've got to make districts that comply with the Voting Rights Act. By not taking race into account at all, then how do we know we've complied? We're only going to know whether we complied if there's litigation. I'd rather we know without litigation to know that we've had some sort of compliance with the Voting Rights Act, because, again, that is a federal mandate. So, again, to me, these can't be about partisanism. I don't think I've ever talked about these being about partisanism. And we can go back through history and talk about who's done what and all that type of thing. Every single day we wake up, we've got a chance to be a new us. Every single day we walk into this chamber, we've got a chance to be something different than what we were before. I just don't care about the history in that sense. Because history can be used to excuse any bad act we want to justify. But history can also be used to teach us how to be better. And that is the way to use history, just like we're talking about with race. The courts don't want us using race impermissibly. We don't want to use our history in the wrong way. Don't use our history to figure out ways to get around things. And I'm not saying we have in this case. But what I'm saying is use this history and use this time to show that the most important aspect of bringing our communities back together, to getting people to have faith in their governments again, are the people in this chamber and that chamber over there. And it's just that simple. And if we do things that continue to encourage separating into camps, then that's how our communities will go. If we do things like we've done some already this session, and like we can still continue to do this session, and we can continue to do in a short session, if we do things to show people that none of these letters matter, none of these background issues matter, then we've got an opportunity to help move our communities forward. And if we move our communities forward, we move our state forward. If we move our state forward, then we start moving other states forward. But a lot of this stuff that a lot of us complain about, and I'm telling you, I hear this from my side, your side, everybody. There's parts of this political process we're just sick of. And maps are a way that we encourage a lot of the bad that's in our political process. So I'm asking that you vote no just to attempt to be corrective. This is not casting aspersions. I cannot imagine being in Chairman Hall's position. Where last year, he was like me, getting to kind of sit back and not even have to pay attention to this process. And then all of a sudden, you're dead in the middle and have to draw it. And then he's got to hear somebody like me get up and say that something he spent 4 weeks on that I'm not happy with. But I'm comfortable, as much as I appreciate Chairman Hall, that if the roles were reversed, he would feel very comfortable telling me that my 4 weeks of work he wasn't happy with. But that's how we get better. And I know that he takes it in that sense. All I'm trying to do is to get us better. And these maps are a big deal to people outside of this chamber. Big deal. And when we were listening, when we were going around and we were listening at these tours, this wasn't just Democrats talking. It's Republicans talking too. They're just tired. They don't want us governing from the edges. They want us governing from a different place in a different way. And a way to do this starts with these maps. So I ask that you consider voting no on this. Let's try to keep tweaking this until we get this in a better place and go forward with that. And thank you.
For what purpose does the lady from Buncombe, Representative Fisher, rise?
To debate the bill, Mr. Speaker.
The lady has the floor.
Thank you. Colleagues, I rise to debate the bill because it appears that the maps specifically for Buncombe are similar to the illegal maps that were from the last decade of our history here. And they differ significantly from the current maps of Buncombe, the current map of Buncombe, and the numbering of the districts even. It's down to that where the numbers have changed. This map has implications not only for the House, but because of Buncombe County's special circumstance of having had districts legislated for them in a past session, it has the further effect of double bunking and complicating the county commission districting process. We had, at least I attended, two public hearings, one before the drawing of the maps and one after. And it was interesting to me to note that at the first public hearing, people asked consistently that there be another hearing once the maps were drawn. And I know that it was made to appear that we had a public hearing after the maps were drawn, but they were commenting on the map that is no longer in front of us. People are not stupid. They know when they're being included and they know when they're not. So in a sense, we have ignored our constituents again. And the bottom line is, I am reminded every single day that our constituents believe that politicians have no business drawing political lines. And that they prefer, our constituents prefer, and this is bipartisan. We proved that by introducing our own bill in the House a few sessions ago where it got bipartisan support. It failed to go further. But we have proof that they prefer a nonpartisan redistricting commission approach to this process. So, short of that, I will be a no vote on HB 976. And I encourage us to go back to the drawing board, think about what it might look like if our constituents had a real role to play in this, instead of being cajoled and coddled into thinking that, yes, they have a big part to play in public hearings and before, during, and after drawing. It's not true. And I am looking for a truer process. So I'll be a no vote. Thank you.
For what purpose does the lady from Guilford, Representative Harrison, rise?
To debate the bill.
The lady has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Ladies and gentlemen of the House, I'll echo Representative Reeves. Thanks to Chair Hall and others who've put so much time, and especially the staff who've put so much time into this, because it has been an enormous amount of time investment. So early on, we heard a lot of interest from the public about how the public process would play out. We heard that on the very first day when we had public comments, and we received a letter, all the committee members received a letter requesting a fairer and more transparent public process. Several of us on the committee offered that fair and more transparent process, but that did not go anywhere. And some of the points that were made were making sure we were facing a COVID situation, that there was accessibility for those virtually, those who had difficulty traveling, better audio and audio and visual quality. Those were not available. They were not live streamed. There were other points about making sure that any data that was used in drawing the maps was disclosed and a process for that, and any third parties involved in redistricting. We thought we had a good process, and hopefully at some point we'll adopt this for future map drawing, but those were not followed. Instead, we had, if I recall correctly, 13 public hearings prior to map drawing and then 4 post-map drawing. And if y'all remember, those of you who were here in 2011, I believe there were over 60 scattered across the state with a significant opportunity for folks to participate virtually and from remote locations, which was really important as we face the COVID. But the feedback I got, now I appreciate that Chair Hall continues to say that this is the most transparent process ever, but the bar is really, really low. And the feedback we kept getting from the public was that it was difficult to find the information they needed on the website. They couldn't navigate it. They felt like they were getting last-minute notice. The maps went out on Friday, and the public hearing was on Monday and Tuesday, and folks hadn't really had a chance to analyze it. And I don't believe the maps were ever interactive on the legislative, so you couldn't go in and figure out your precinct or your community of interest. And also just that it was just a very difficult to watch the map drawing, that the audio wasn't great, the video wasn't as great either. So I think there's a way, and I don't mean this necessarily as a huge criticism, I just think that we could think about this going forward, that there could have been a better way to actually, for the public to understand what was going on, because they didn't feel like they did. And I didn't read all 4,000 comments that have been filed. I've been trying to get through and get a sense of what the biggest complaints were, but that was probably the biggest complaint, was the public participation. And the second biggest complaint was that they didn't think the maps were fair at all. And I heard that a ton. And repeated references to the Princeton gerrymandering project giving our map an F and the Senate and the congressional maps, which I guess we'll be voting on tomorrow, Fs. And I sort of agree with the points that have been made prior to me, that there's a better way to do this, a fairer way to do this, and a way that reflects our values and our priorities. It was never clear to me with the criteria, and we asked about this repeatedly, what is the hierarchy here? What are the priorities? We've got a bunch of criteria that we're considering, but when you have a conflict between compactness and a municipality split or VTD split, what prevails? And it was never clear to me how we were taking into account communities of interest. And I'm not really sure that the public right now can actually tell from our maps that are on the website how their communities of interest are impacted. But we heard a lot of public comments about communities of interest. And I will just repeat, I don't want to repeat, I will just echo the comments that there was a better way to do this, and I don't think this is it, and I don't think these maps are fair, and I'm going to be voting no. Thank you.
For what purpose does the lady from Wilson, Representative Cooper Suggs, rise?
To debate the bill, Mr. Speaker. The
lady has floor.
My colleagues, I rise today because I think we've missed an opportunity to make these maps better and more fair for our constituents. When I say more fair, I mean creating districts that are competitive and that reflect their communities. When we split communities in thirds or pack together counties that span half the state, we're not giving the people of North Carolina what they deserve. If people feel like they have had a fair opportunity to participate in their elections, they have more trust in government and more trust in elected officials. Is that not what our goal should be? In the last decade, we've seen what happens when redistricting goes wrong. Lots of lawsuits, lots of anger, and lots of distrust. We've had electoral maps repeatedly thrown out by the courts for the State House, the State Senate, Congress, and even local commissions. All of this conflict has a price. Taxpayers paid millions of dollars last decade to pay for legal fees and court costs during the redistricting cases. Some parts of our state had to hold new elections because candidates no longer lived in the district that they were elected to. In addition to the financial cost, there is a cost as voters lose faith. Yes, I said faith in democracy, and lose faith in this body, the General Assembly. It is impossible to put a price tag on losing something so inherent to our foundations as a country, but it is a much bigger cost than just dollars and cents. The single best way we could afford all of this is to agree on a compromise that gets a majority of votes from both caucuses. With almost all Democratic amendments getting defeated last night in the committee, the bill we have before us is a missed opportunity to instill faith in this body and our democracy. I want to thank everyone who worked so hard on those maps, even though I strongly disagree with all of them. If we end up back at the drawing board to draw new districts, I hope that we will seek to reach a consensus that better serves all the people of North Carolina rather than just a few. I ask each of you, let's go back to the drawing board. I ask you to vote no on this bill. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
For what purpose does the lady from Mecklenburg, Representative Carney, rise?
To speak on the bill. The
lady has the floor.
1 minute. Thank you. I had to get fired up here. My batteries. I rise to speak on this bill. And I might say some things that you might not think I would be saying. But I have been on this committee, and I'm going to start out by saying, like everybody else is saying, we do appreciate all the work that has gone into, from the chairman who has been in that room, that people at home, if they knew it was on the audio, they could on the live stream in there, they could see it. They could watch people coming in, but people most of the time, as I think the chairman pointed out, the screen was set so that if you looked at that screen, you just saw the center of the room, a few screens set up, and you'd see one or two people, but you saw 4 to 6 people in there all the time every day. They were staff. The process, I went to a lot of the public hearings. And the comments that I heard, and I think that what I kept trying to remind myself of, everyone I went to, I read some of the ones entered on the public input. I read, Representative Harrison said, about 4,000. I read through some of those. I skimmed through them. And they were very well thought out, a lot of time and thought put into what their comments were. I heard from a lot of people that once in 10 years we do this in North Carolina, right? I heard that, right? Representative Carney, is that right? Yeah, well, when do we get to have our say? So I said, talk to your individual elected officials in your districts. Call them up. Tell them what you think these maps going forward should look like. You can also, and I directed them to our website to go in and make comments. We had our first initial committee meetings of the full redistricting committee in September. We couldn't really do anything, we were told, until the census came out. We could have maybe in the beginning had some teaching to the community, informing the community on how the process would work when we actually got into our work, and we could have brought more people on at that point of being a part of the process. So we had throughout, The most number, and maybe I'm wrong here, so don't quote me, the highest number of attendees was like 110 at a couple of the public hearings. Some had 25 people that spoke. Of the 110 that, when there was a large number there, maybe 50 spoke. So not a lot of people got to come and put their personal input into their maps. They're not our maps. What we've spent, and the chairman has spent a ton of time drawing his map that is before us today, they're not our maps. They belong to the people out here. And as someone said earlier, they're smart. They're probably smarter than some of us when we get up here. We think we're smart. But some of the comments were, and you've heard it over and over, but it bears repeating so that we're listening. We're listening. Fortunately, we're live stream now. And I hope that a lot of people put it out there to your constituents to watch today the debate in the House on redistricting. So people wanted the live streaming for them at the hearings. That was said at every hearing I attended and the notes that I got from others. They called it an autocratic practice. Oh, wow. Transparency. So how do you define transparency? I asked a few people, how do you define transparency? And they said that so that every segment of the population that votes in the state can have access to what you all are doing. And particularly we heard, why don't you have interpreters here for the people of Hispanic communities, Asian communities? We heard at one of the public hearings, why don't you have translators here? And so we had an opportunity to reach a lot of people in North Carolina. This is a big, big move that we're making. I heard another statement. I just jotted a few down so that I could share with you, since we didn't have 120 people attending every public hearing in the state. We had, from the committee, we would have 4 to 5 at one. I think we had 8. So I'm sharing with you that this should be an informative, not proformative experience for us. And this other person said, don't let your fear stop your support of democracy, where he had expounded upon the fear of legislators losing their seats. So don't let your fear stop your support of democracy. Another one I heard was maps should promote democracy. I heard that numerous times. And then it violates, they said, you know, gerrymandering, I heard from a lot of people, has been going on for a long, long time, historically. True, I think a lot of us would say that, both sides of the aisle. So this person said it violates equal protection in the Constitution, gerrymandering does. So I thought about all of that through this whole process, and again, we need to, some people pat yourselves on the back, and those that have been involved both sides of the aisle closely to the process, yeah. But you got elected, and if you got in the majority, that's your job. That's what you're supposed to do. So you should be doing it well. And if you got elected and you're in the minority, that's your job. That's our job. And that's why I took this redistricting seriously, to listen. It's about all that when you're in the minority that you can do is listen and be the voice of those people that came out. And the times of the day for some of these public hearings, 3 o'clock, on a Wednesday, and I thank the speaker for changing the session that day, because it was in Mecklenburg. And we had a voting session that day, and I couldn't even go to my public hearing in my county unless I missed voting session, so the speaker worked with us. So I thanked him for that, and I thank him again. But there were a lot of people that could not get there. They work in the middle of the day. And we all, a lot of us up here work, a lot of us involved in this worked and couldn't be there on Saturdays or Sundays. So there was opportunity missed, but there were opportunities, I will say, for the public input. Did we have enough? Nobody's ever going to have enough of anything. But through all of that, I go back to, and I'll say it again, somebody else has already mentioned it, but I think it needs worth saying again. And that is an independent redistricting commission. I did my homework. I said yesterday in committee, just an FYI to committee members, that there were, since I came here in 2003 sworn in, 39 in the Senate and the House between the two, 39 independent redistricting commissions, bills. None went anywhere. Notice 2003 to 2021, Democrats in charge and Republicans in charge through my term here. No bills got heard and went anywhere. So I even broke it down a little further than that. So starting in from 2003 to 2009, there were, during the Democrat time in office, majority, there was one bipartisan independent redistricting commission bill filed, and there were four Republican during the Democratic leadership. And then from 2009 to 2010 to today, or 2021, there have been numerous bipartisan bills, but there have been seven Democratic bills filed and eight Republicans. Five during the time that the Republicans here in this chamber have been in the majority. And they've gone nowhere. So I'm saying to you, and some of the members that sponsored the bills and co-sponsored them are still serving on both sides of the aisle. Why can't we do that? Why can't we let go of it and bring in that's been studied and looked at and recommended for several years in the state? What are we, as that one person that came to the public hearing, what are we afraid of? We cannot fear it. If we do, we're going to lose democracy. You don't want that in the majority. We don't want that in the minority. So I'm asking you today to think about what we're about to do, and this is to the citizens of the state for the next 10 years. Demographics are going to change, but these maps are going to be with us. So what you're getting today, they may not be the same by the end of this 10-year term of new redistricting. I'm grateful to have had the opportunity. I'm not believing I'm saying this on the floor, that I served on this committee. I've learned a lot. I came to this not knowing that much of all the acronyms, digging deep down, but I learned a lot from it. I still have a lot to learn. I'm sorry that the entire body has not had the opportunity to have a deep dive into redistricting and understanding it. Maybe you have on your own, and if you have, I applaud you. So I'm thankful for serving on this committee. I'm grateful for the chairman and the work that he's done. And I will say that 2 weeks of, and I think it was 10 days, in 643, there was a live camera, and the public could see live people in there, not sure what they were doing, but some drawing maps. But that's the public's perception. I've never talked this long on the floor, but it's really a passion with me, and I do want everybody to realize how important this vote is today. And can you go back home and say to everyone in your district, not just the ones of your party persuasion, but everyone in your district, this is a very fair map for our district. It gives everybody equal representation. It gives everybody a voice at the table. And one final quote from someone at one of the hearings said that all the problem with these maps going forward are that most of the elections from this map, as in the past, are going to be won in primaries. Think about it. I ask you to vote no.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Durham, Representative Hawkins, rise?
To debate the bill. The
gentleman has the floor.
I want to thank the chairman for the time and effort and for the amazing words of my colleagues. And so I'll try not to repeat too much, but I fear that you're picking up on the themes that all of us are really concerned about. And I think we're all, you know, familiar with these words, to be rather than to seem. And sort of what defines North Carolina as a state, its people, and the culture that we try to promote here, and nothing more exemplifies that than what we do here in Raleigh, specifically on the issue of redistricting. And so as I get started, one of the things that I want to make sure that people understand and what they have to realize, especially because we have cameras here, is that people are watching what we do. It's the people who go to work every single day, who work for wages that are not a living wage, who try to put food on their family's table, and who trust us to make the decisions that will impact their lives. We have young people who have seen the world change in front of their eyes because of a pandemic, social unrest, and all sorts of political changes, and want to know that they have 120 people, at least in this house, that have their best interest at heart. And so we want them to have faith, as one of my colleagues said. We want them to have faith in this process. We want them to know that we're the people that they should look up to and that we are going to do what we say we're going to do. That we have to make sure that we're educating and we're informing so they see us as people that they can trust. And so that's why I'll focus on just a few of the criteria. And so based on the criteria that we adopted, one of those is that we're going to try and split the fewest VTDs, and the chairman is absolutely correct, that we, compared to previous maps, we absolutely did that. Out of the six or seven that we had that were proposed in these maps, I don't know whether I should be proud to say or reluctant to say that half of those are in Durham County. three of those are in Durham County, and I know we have other options to choose and ways that we could ensure that we don't split VTDs. And let me give you sort of a zoom out on what that sort of leads to next. When you start to split VTDs, you start to split into communities. And one of the things that we sort of held dear in this process is compactness and the fact that we wanted to ensure that communities of interest remained whole. I'll use my county as an example and I go on to others. But in Durham County, for example, if you're in northern Durham, you do things in northern Durham on that side of town. On the east side of town that borders RTP, you have East Durham, all the shops that are connected to the downtown area. You have Briar Creek, which is just across the border, and people do things on those sides of town. When they start to think about who they're going to vote for, they assume that they will be voting for the same person that their neighbor is voting for. It's only logical sense. And the reason that's important is because they'll talk about the schools that their kids go to. They'll talk about the way that those schools are zoned, the school funding that those areas receive, the bus routes, the roads that may be damaged, right? The things that they want to see improved in their community, they want to have commonality in the boundaries that they have so that they then can go to one person and get those problems solved. And as we see sort of across this map and the way that we have drawn some of our districts that have violated the community of interest criteria, it really does go to everything that you heard from my colleagues. They wonder why. Why is this that way? Are they being drawn for interests that are not my own? Are they being drawn to favor one party over the other? And we also saw this play out, and one of the rules that we were trying to adhere to was the fewest changes. But in many ways, we found that in the example of Pitt County, in a district that should have been rarely changed with small changes, that we had many changes that resulted in a much, much different district. One of the practices that results in all of these things is that people believe that gerrymandering is hateful practice, is a bad practice that only benefits one group over the other. And what it does, and they are tired of it, is that it promotes extremes. Durham, no doubt, everyone knows this, is a pretty democratic town. But let me tell you, when I get in front of those people and I talk about the fact that I have conversations across the aisle on common things with my colleagues, they clap every single time. It doesn't matter what sort of bill I'm working on individually. It doesn't matter what type of thing I think is important. But when I tell them that we're putting the people of North Carolina ahead of our own political interest and we're working together, applause rings out. And if we don't get a chance to follow this criteria in the way that we said we were, right, being rather than to seem, it hurts their ability to trust what we're doing here, and it makes them tune out to the process. Now, the one thing I know about all of you is that because you serve, you care about your communities. You want more people to participate in democracy. And so if that's the case, I'm going to kindly sort of have to ask you to vote no on this. Because one thing that I know for sure is that North Carolina has had a history lately of not just doing this once a decade. Now, I know that the chairman wants to do this once this decade. I'm pretty sure of that, and I want to join him in that effort. But it does seem like we're going down the road of seeing each other again on the redistricting committee. And I don't want that to happen. I don't want that to happen at all. And so one of the things that I have proposed, and I've said it quite a few times in our committee, is that there's nothing wrong with slowing this process down, pushing our primary back, and making sure that we get this done right the first time. Get this right for done the first time. I'm a child that has a May birthday. I grew up in North Carolina having May primaries. I could always look forward to that. And this move to March doesn't benefit us in any really way outside of the presidential years. And so us moving our primaries back, taking our time, ensuring that we have all the interest and the input from the people of North Carolina is not a bad thing. I think each of your constituents will really appreciate that. And so that's what I'm asking and proposing as I vote no, and for you to consider joining me in voting no. Because to me, nothing is more important than good government. Nothing is more important than good government, and that's what people want. They want to make sure that they understand that we're working together, that we're building together, and that there are things that they can look at down the road and say, we did this as North Carolinians. And so if you believe that, if you believe in a better North Carolina, if you believe in making sure that we uphold democracy and that we adhere to democracy, that you'll vote no for this bill and join us in helping to make this a better process. So I want to thank again the chairman and all of the staff, all of my colleagues who spent time drawing these maps. And I know this process is far from over, but I want to thank everyone for all of their hard work, and hopefully we can build this together later. Thank you.
For what purpose, the lady from Durham, Representative Maury Rice.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To ask the bill sponsor a question.
Representative Hall, gentlemen yield.
I yield.
He yields.
Thank you, Representative Hall. You've done an amazing amount of work. It's taken a long time. I was not on redistricting, but watched with great interest many times when it was being live streamed. And I have two very respectful and pretty simple questions. And so watching the live stream and seeing you drawing the maps and getting up from the drawing and going with maps and going out of the room, coming back into the room with map, setting down, redrawing, or continuing drawing. Two questions. When you left the room, was there any materials that you referred to or consulted with to make changes when you came back into the room to keep drawing the maps? Was there any demographic material, other materials you would use to make changes?
No.
Thank you. One follow-up.
Chairman Yield.
I yield.
He yields.
And similarly, were there any consultants, experts, individuals you would consult with when you would be drawing the map, leaving the room, coming back, and sitting down to continue your work?
There were no outside consultants that I used at all in any way in the drawing of this map.
Thank you. I appreciate it. May I speak on the bill?
The lady has the floor to debate the bill.
And my questions to the chairman were not meant to be critical at all. I think it just reflects our human nature. We're sitting here as a body, basically on two teams. 69 on that side, 51 on this side. We're getting ready to go decide how we're going to play the new sport, who's going to play what positions, who's going to draw the lines on the field, or what kind of field it's going to be. You got 69, we got 51. Why do we even go out on the court? But we are very interested. But I think that goes also to the rhetorical question I think the chairman said. Why didn't we come out and draw the maps? We know the outcome. It's 69 to 51, most likely. And if it were the opposite, and it were 69 on this side and 51, it's the same deal. But I think it goes exactly to what Representative Carney said. I couldn't go in and offer a map because fundamentally I represent people who have told me and I have told them it's an independent redistricting commission that should take charge. And so I can't in good faith and good conscience be a politician and go in and sit at a terminal and draw a map that I want that will reflect my political beliefs and my political philosophies. You can't do that. It's hypocritical. It won't happen. It's not human nature. And so I think that's why you're hearing from our side of the aisle, yes, we're in the minority. Yes, these maps will be passed. But there's a better way to do it. It is totally a political process, even though we say we're not using political data. It's all about politics, but it shouldn't be. It should be about the representation of the people of the state, at least one-third who aren't even a member of either political party. And where are they? So I hope we do introduce good legislation, and it takes us out of the politics and the drawings and gives an even playing field, not to us, but to the people we represent. Thank you.
For what purpose, the gentleman from Robinson? Representative Graham rise.
Inquiry, Mr. Chair.
For me or the bill sponsor? Gentleman's recognized.
Will we be taking any amendments this afternoon?
We are. I think the amendments are still, I understand that maybe you had an amendment and someone else. The chair's not in possession of any amendments at this time. There's also an amendment that'll simply try to do, that'll renumber the matters. We haven't received those. So what I'd talked to the minority leader and the majority leader about was we can do the second reading and then we can take the amendments on third. That way we can go into a recess till we get those amendments.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to debate the bill. The
gentleman has four.
Thank you, members. I'll be brief. I've had the opportunity to serve in this body for, this is my sixth term, going through redistricting, obviously, for the second time. And I'm really concerned about what I've seen as it relates to my district. I am the only one of me in this body. I represent approximately 50-plus thousand Lumbees in Robinson County. Of course, some in Scotland County and some over in Hope County. Since the 70s, we've had a Lumbee serving in this body. And Representative Morey just mentioned representation. That's very important. And it's very important to my people, the Lumbee people in Robinson County and other citizens in that county. But my district has always been a primarily and without question a majority American Indian district. And I'm really concerned about what I'm seeing on the map that I've been presented today, and I've been watching over the last few days. I will be submitting an amendment, but I want to appeal to this committee and to the chair. Let's not undermine the opportunity to have American Indians in this body. And I think if we proceed down the path that I'm looking at, that could potentially happen. And I'm really concerned about that. And I hope you're concerned about that. And I appreciate the speaker allowing me the opportunity this session to represent the tribes of North Carolina as a committee chair. To me, that's very important. It gives our citizens a voice. It gives the tribes a voice here in this body. And from time to time, I've had many of you over the course of the past 12 years come to me and ask for advice on particular items as it related to our American Indians in this state. I can imagine that you would support or not support having an American Indian in this body. And I hope you will really take this to heart. Our people need representation here too. I have communities of interest. I hate to bring up the race card, but I'm going to talk about culture. And I'll just pick out the Chairman Hall. I mean, he's the chairman. He drew these maps. And I can say that I bet you that his district looks like him. No doubt in my mind it looks like him. I want a district that looks like me in this house, in this body, whether I'm standing here or not. Our people deserve it, and I expect that I'll be sending an amendment that will support that at some point. And I just want to make you aware that I'm really concerned about the potential that we're getting to obviously see happen is for the first time in over 50 years may not have an American Indian standing on this floor. That's a possibility, and I just want to emphasize that. And Mr. Speaker, thank you for the opportunity, and thank you for listening.
And actually, Representative Graham, I want to let you know the amendments we actually are going to run on the second reading so that they don't have to redraft them for third. So I think the amendments are on the way over. So if we get to a point where the debate has ended and where the amendments have not yet received the amendments, what I'll probably do is put everything at ease until we get those amendments in. So we're going to try to take care of those on second. For what purpose does the gentleman from Cumberland, Representative Richardson, rise?
To debate the...
The gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members, this is where the rubber meets the road. Two people far smarter than I have said it this way. The right of voting for representation is the primary right by which other rights are protected. Thomas Paine. John Adams. The principal difficulty lies in the greatest care should be employed in constituting the representative assembly. It should be a miniature, an exact portrait of the people at large. It should think, feel, reason, and act like them. That it may be the interest of the assembly to do strict justice at all times, it should be an equal representation. Or in other words, equal interest among the people should have equal interest in it. Great care should be taken to effect this and to prevent unfair, partial, and corrupt elections. John Adams. The one thing that I've always respected about a conservative is that they, probably more than any other group, profess that they stand on principles of the Constitution and principles of their core beliefs. And I've seen many times the other side of the aisle has done this. Years ago, you were the leaders of impartial redistricting. What has happened? Why have you backed off that belief? Caucus politics is hard, but standing on your merit and standing on your beliefs is harder. Today is a day that each of you should not listen to your caucus or what your caucus is saying to the extent it overrides your basic core beliefs. And one of the hardest things we all do in here, one of the most difficult things we do in here, and I do it time and again, is I often will go against my basic core beliefs to back and strengthen my caucus. But not at this expense. John Adams was right when he said what he said here. We all know it. We just don't have the courage to do it. We need to go to some form of impartial redistricting. It's the only answer. I watched an extraordinarily good man that I have immense respect for, our rural chairman, struggle with this for 2 weeks and struggle with the debate on the floor last night. And it was hard. It was a hard debate for all of us. The reason is we're trying to fit a square peg in a round hole. We're drawing the very districts and the very lines in which the people are going to elect us. Are we following John Adams' admonition? No, we're not. Let's take this bill back, put in it a, and it'll work this way. If we would put an impartial redistricting in it, let those folks draw the lines, and then we have control over the ultimate outcome of it by voting to make sure they honored the principles that John Adams says. This assembly is at its best. I believe this to my core because I've run in a number of districts that are about 50-50 districts. It makes you a better candidate. It makes you a better person. It makes you work harder. And it makes you listen to different beliefs when you're in a 50-50 district. Trust me. I know. Y'all, this is just too important. We have a chance to do something extraordinarily special, extraordinarily right as a group. I sense it in everybody in this room that this is a chance to get it right. Reconsider this. Please reconsider it. Thank you.
For what purpose, gentlemen from Wake, Representative Jones Rice.
I rise to speak to the bill.
Gentleman has four.
I didn't plan to say anything about the bill, and I even said that to others. I didn't plan to speak, and I'm not going to speak on the lines and all that, so I'm going to sort of keep that promise. But I want to speak more globally about this process. Every 10 years, understand the legislature does this. And it's very, very important to the people of North Carolina. It reminds me of, to democracy, the election process and the vote is like in the subway system, they have two rails that run the train, but then over on the side, they have another rail. That's a third rail. And that's where the power comes from. And if you touch the rail, it'll execute you as a human being. That's how powerful it is. This process here that we're about to engage in is the third rail of democracy. And I had a friend in this body. He's no longer here. He's still living. Good man. A lot of you may have known him. Skip Stam from Apex. Good, solid, conservative Republican. And Skip, I knew Skip from law practice, and I knew Carl Holloman, who knew Skip, and Skip was a very smart guy. Skip, I don't think I'm misinterpreting this, now supports a commission to do this work. I don't know what he did when he was in the body, but this is what he now supports. And I believe the reason for that is because it would lift us, we members, whether you're on the minority side or majority side, out of the process and put it in the hands of men and women and experts who are Democrat, Republican, black, white, Native American, whatever, who would be on a commission and try to do the best they can with the process that deals with the third rail of our democracy, which is voting. And it's important, whether you win or lose an election, that you feel that process was fair. You may get the most votes and win. You may get fewer votes and lose. But at least you feel in your gut, I got heard and my vote didn't count any more than another person's or any less. That's democracy. So I hope I'm going to say some things toward the future. And I'm going to make a couple promises here. don't know how long I'm going to be in this house. But if I ever am in the house and I'm in the majority, I'm going to say the same thing I'm saying now in the minority. I'm going to support a commission. I'm going to sort of process that lifts it out of us and gives it to a commission so that we can change the perception that when the D's are in charge, they control it and they manipulate it. And when the R's are in charge, they manipulate it. And the people can say, we now believe that they will be fair. That's what I want to support in the future. And here I have a suggestion. You may not follow this, but this is what I think. Regardless of what happens today, we kind of know what the deal's going to be in the lines and all that. But I'm not getting into the lines. But I hope that even when it's not the odd year after the even year, 2021, 3031 after 30, why can't we in the future work on this together in future sessions between now and the next one and change this process that obviously is flawed? It's flawed. And I don't care how long they've been doing it, but the great thing about a democracy, we can change it and make it even better. So I implore you down the road, I know today is sort of done, but down the road, why don't we look at this together in the non-election years, the non-year after the 10, and say, let's make it better. Let's put something together that's different for the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Jones. Ms. Churchill, are any of those amendments? Actually, Ms. Churchill, could the lady approach the dais, please?
The House will come back to order. Members, before we get underway, we do want to welcome a special guest on motion of Representative Belk, who actually herself was in the gallery right now. We're ready to please extend the courtesies of the gallery to the Mayor Pro Tem of Charlotte, Julie Isla, who's with us. Ms. Isla, if you'd stand, please. We want to thank you for being here with us today. Members, we are ready to proceed with the amendments. We're going to take up Amendment ABW 23V2. Representative Graham is recognized to send forth the amendment. The clerk will read.
Representative Graham moves to amend the bill on page 5, lines 43 to 48, by rewriting those lines to read.
The gentleman from Robinson has the floor to debate the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll be brief. I think I stated earlier my concern and with this amendment. The amendment really does give, I guess it's House District 24, an opportunity to have someone of the American Indian community here in the legislature. As I said earlier, we can go back to the 70s and we've had a member of the tribe standing on this floor. And my amendment will, nothing's guaranteed, but it will give the citizens of Robinson County and the folks of the Lumbee tribe a majority decision as they go to the polls and make a choice. The numbers work out very well. Of course, it gives the municipalities of Roland back to the district, which I served 2 years ago, and I'm serving the area of Fairmont. And this amendment gives those districts back to for this particular amendment. As I said earlier, this is an opportunity to ensure, I think, a good opportunity to ensure that a member of the tribe would be the Lumbee tribe would be represented in this body. And I think that's what I hope you would want, to give us good representation across the state. And I know some of you represent tribes, but those tribes are not in a majority in your districts. But this happens to be, Robinson County happens to be the most diverse, culturally diverse county in this country. And this amendment will give the citizens of that county representation and a very good chance to have a member of the Lumbee tribe serving in this body. And I would ask you to support this amendment. Thank you.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Caldwell, Representative Hall, rise?
To debate the amendment.
The gentleman has the floor to debate the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members, I'm going to respectfully ask you to vote no on the amendment. For those of you who were here in 2017, you may remember that we had some litigation on our maps at that time, and we had to come in and redraw. And the amendment that's before you, in large part, replicates the district that was struck down by the court. And, of course, we want to avoid any such strike down this time around. So, again, I respectfully ask you to vote no on the amendment.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Chatham, Representative Reeves, rise?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just ask for a recorded vote on both amendments.
The chair will be taking recorded votes on the amendments. For what purpose, the gentleman from Robinson, yes, Representative Graham?
Speak a second time.
The gentleman has the floor.
Well, I do remember that, Representative Hall, and I don't think that was the factor that I don't think that's the correct statement you made, and I disagree with you 100%. My county got caught up into that, and that was the fix. It was another district that was at question, and my county, my district, got caught up in that, and of course, it was changed considerably. I disagree with that. So members, don't buy that. Don't buy that. It's not true. And I will tell you, my basis for my amendment is to give the Lumbee people in Robinson County representation in this body. And I would ask you, don't accept that. Of course my district was changed, but it was not because my district was not a part of the litigation. So I'm asking you, do not accept that. I'm asking you, give this amendment an opportunity which if you do vote for this amendment, it will give an opportunity for someone who looks like me and who looks like many of your districts an opportunity to be served and have representation in this body. So I'd ask you to support this amendment. Thank you.
For what purpose does the lady from Mecklenburg, Representative Cunningham, rise?
To ask my colleague, Representative Graham, a question.
Representative Graham, does the gentleman yield?
I yield.
He yields.
Thank you, Representative Graham. In District 23 and District 24, do we know how much is comprised of Lumbee Indians in that area?
Well, there are Lumbees in both districts, 23 and 24, but if we accept this amendment, the majority in District 20, the District 24 would be a majority Lumbee.
Thank you, sir.
Further discussion, further debate. If not, the question for the House is the adoption of Amendment A1, sent forward by Representative Graham. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Clerk will lock the machine and record the vote. 49 having voted in the affirmative and 66 in the negative, the amendment is not adopted. Representative Reeves is recognized to send forward Amendment ABW 24. The clerk will read.
Stop. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Representative Reeves moves to amend the bill on page 4, lines 43 through 49 by rewriting the lines to read.
Now the gentleman from Chatham has the floor to debate the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And this particular amendment, as you see, takes two of the Stevenson groupings and puts them together. So this is completely different than any of the amendments that I've offered on any prior occasions last night or any other time, or even in the map that I drew. The map that I drew before or during this last 2 weeks and also the amendments I've offered have gone by the rules that I feel that the committee has set for. There's one area that I fundamentally disagreed with our approach on, and just an interpretation of the legal situation that we're in, and I alluded to this in my earlier argument. That's what this amendment addresses. As a lot of you know, last night's PCS was the first time that we saw a new grouping and a new change in the districts that cover Wayne, Sampson, Bladen in those areas. And so we couldn't do anything about having an amendment ready for that because last night was the first time we saw it and obviously didn't want everybody to stay here late at night for that. This morning did not get to Raleigh in time. My comrade Representative Terry Brown was able to help out and I was able to communicate to him what it is I was trying to draw, and that's what we got. And I really appreciate staff getting this together as quickly as it did. So as I stated, from the beginning of this process, our discussion has been that we've got to address the Voting Rights Act. There's no way around that. Stevenson, to me, makes it very clear that we have to address the Voting Rights Act. The fundamental difference in our approaches, in our two different interpretations that I and the chairman have about this particular part, is that we feel that in order to comply with Stevenson, that you actually have to draw your Voting Rights Act districts first. Once you draw those districts, then you commence to drawing the rest of the map by the rules and the points that we brought up as far as the criteria that we've used. And so what I'm offering today is that approach, whereas we've put two Stevenson groupings together to draw a Voting Rights Act qualified district. And if you look at the area, and for those of you especially that serve that area and remember that area, it was just 4 years ago that African Americans were able to elect the candidate of their choice in those counties, in Wayne and Lenore counties. Well, now, with the new configuration, there's an argument to be made that African Americans can elect one person of their choice with the configuration that we have in place. We believe that is what the Voting Rights Act was meant to address. And one point I want to clarify is there's a huge difference between making a majority-minority district and making a district where African Americans have the opportunity to elect the candidate of their choice. It can be a much smaller percentage, but still allow for that opportunity. This amendment would allow for that opportunity, and therefore I would ask you to support this amendment.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Caldwell, Representative Hall, rise?
to debate the amendment.
Gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, again, respectfully, I'm going to ask you to vote against the amendment. I'll say that, you know, as to some of the amendments last night and, of course, as to the amendment today, I've had very little time to look at them, to digest them, to think through them. And that's despite the fact that the committee room has been open for about 3 weeks. And for much of that time, I've been right over there where anybody could come in and speak to me anytime they wanted to. Members, if you look at this grouping, the proposed amendment that's before you, you don't have to really be an expert to look at that and think that's gerrymandering. This is the exact kind of thing that folks across the state in public comment told us they wanted to avoid. They wanted to avoid districts that look like monsters or some sort of creature. And if you look at this district, it's not compact at all. In fact, the 7th district on this actually has the worst compactness score under what's called the Polsby-Popper score of any district in the entire map at 0.09. Additionally, members, in this amendment, it would violate the state's constitution. And I understand Representative Reeves and I have a different viewpoint on that, but in my opinion, this would violate the state's constitution, because it traverses counties too many times. The purple 6th district runs from Wayne Green down into Lenoir, again in violation of the Stevenson decision. Members, the grouping that was chosen ultimately, and I went back and forth on this one as I worked in the committee room, and ultimately, well, when I discovered that every member and determined finally that every member in this grouping would be coming back and plan to run again, I looked at that again. That's one of our criteria, is doing our best not to double bunk. And so at that point, I knew somebody had to be double bunk. And so I said, okay, well, let's go look at the other criteria. And if you look at the counties that are in the grouping that are in the map, Bladen and Sampson have better community connections than Bladen and Pender. Bladen is more of a agricultural rural county, Pender more of a beach suburban county, and really it makes more sense for Bladen and Sampson to be together than it does Bladen and Pender. In the map drawn on the base map, Goldsboro is kept whole. And in fact, the districts in that grouping are more compact than any other that I've seen drawn in this particular grouping. It also keeps Onslow mostly the same as it was, except for swapping Duplin for what is Pender on our current map. So, members, for those reasons, and again, if you can just look at it and tell this doesn't pass the eye test, I would ask you to vote no on the amendment.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Chatham, Representative Reeves, rise?
To speak to amendment a second time.
The gentleman has the floor.
And I would just say, as a friendly reminder, on this particular grouping, the chairman and I actually drew basically the same groupings. The first time we saw a change in this grouping was last night. And so I don't know we disagree until we disagree. So again, this wasn't a trial by, you know, laying in wait. This was we saw a map last night that differed from the map that's been out for the last week or two. We have now given you something in response to that. Secondly, I will remind you, this is not an argument about compactness. The question simply is, does Stevenson require that we draw Voting Rights Act districts first? If you draw those, by definition, those are going to be ugly districts. So that's not what this is about. That's the plain question. Do we draw those Voting Rights Act districts first? According to what we've done so far, we have not addressed the Voting Rights Act at all in this map. This would address that. I'd ask you to support the amendment.
Further discussion, further debate? If not, the question for the House is the adoption of Amendment 82 sent forward by Representative Reeves. Those in favor of the amendment will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Clerk will lock the machine and record the vote. 49, having voted in the affirmative, and 67 in the negative, the amendment is not adopted. Representative Hall is recognized to send forth Amendment AST 72, the Corporate Rule.
Representative Hall moves to amend the bill on page 1, line 9 through page 13, line 19 by rewriting those lines to read.
Representative Hall is recognized to explain the amendment.
Members, as many of you mentioned, many of the members of my caucus and some of the folks in the other caucus mentioned Representative Reeves, the districts on the what I'll call the base map that's before you today, the numbers were a bit off from what we're used to seeing. And so I went ahead and did my best today to try to get an amendment to fix those numbers within this map. And so that's all this does. It doesn't change the map at all. It tries to make these district numbers a little bit closer to what they currently have. Didn't realize how important that might be to some folks, but it is. And I'll offer a piece of free political advice. Probably shouldn't be running on your district number anyway, but that's okay. We're going to change these and try to get them as close as we can. So I don't believe this is a controversial amendment. I actually asked Representative Reeves if he would send me what the request from the Democrats, and I knew on our side, you know, who really, really cared about it, and we tried to get it as close as we could. So please support the amendment.
Further discussion, further debate? If not, the question for the House is the adoption of Amendment A3 sent forward by Representative Hall. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Representatives Hawkins. Representative Hawkins wish to vote? The clerk will lock the machine and record the vote. 116 having voted in the affirmative and none in the negative. Amendment A3 is adopted. That was a close one. All right. All the amendments have been taken at this point. Further discussion, further debate on the bill? If not, the question for the House is the passage of House Bill 976 on its second reading. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Representative Richardson wishes to vote. Clerk will lock the machine and record the vote. 68 having voted in the affirmative, 48 in the negative. House Bill 976 passed the second reading and will be read a third time.
General Assembly of North Carolina enacts.
Further discussion, further debate. Representative Moore, does the lady wish to be recorded as a no on that first vote?
Yes, sir.
I was holding out hope there, so I was dashed my hopes up here, Representative Moore. I was like, further discussion, further debate. If not, the question for the House is the passage of House Bill 976 on its third reading. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Clerk will lock the machine and record the vote. 67 having voted in the affirmative and 49 of the negative. House Bill 976 passes its third reading. The bill is ordered engrossed and sent to the Senate by a special messenger.
The House will come back to order. Members, let me give you the schedule for tomorrow. Tomorrow's session will be at 9 a.m. There will be votes at 9 a.m. We are hoping that we are going to have the conference report on the UI issue that I talked about earlier. The other two conference reports that were removed from today's calendar will be calendared for tomorrow as well. The plan would be that we have that session. There is a GovOps meeting at 10 o'clock tomorrow that would begin either at 10 or after we adjourn. And then the redistricting committee is going to meet in the afternoon. Representative Hall, do you know that time yet? Okay. That notice will be sent out either in session tomorrow morning, or may even get a notice out this evening. The plan for the redistricting committee tomorrow is to take up the Senate maps and the congressional maps. So those will be in committee tomorrow, and then those would be on the floor of the House on Thursday. The chair will attempt to have session as early in the day as possible as Thursday. So there would not appear to be any other committee meetings necessary at that time. So we'll try to use your time wisely and get to that Thursday morning. So members should plan to be here tomorrow morning at 9 and should plan for votes to occur at that time. Notices or announcements? For what purpose? The gentleman from Moore, Representative Bowles, rise.
Mr. Speaker, for an announcement.
The gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Joint Legislative Commission on Governmental Operations, this is a subcommittee on use and distribution of federal COVID funding, will meet tomorrow morning, Wednesday, 3rd November at 10 a.m. in the Legislative Building Auditorium. Please note that this is a time change at 10 a.m. Also, this is a subcommittee on use and distribution of federal COVID funding. Members, this is not a full GovOps commission, and everyone is welcome tomorrow morning, 10 o'clock in the legislative auditorium. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Guilford, Representative Faircloth, rise?
Speak to a person of point of privilege, please.
The gentleman has the floor to speak to a point of personal privilege.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Late last week, we missed an opportunity that because of the rush that was going on and so forth. So I want to go back a few days and pick up something that's very important. There was a gentleman about 12, 13 years ago that was thinking about getting into politics. He came and talked to me about it because I was thinking about that time too. And we worked together and he helped me get elected. Now, some years later, this gentleman is a member of this body, has been a good while. And he told me yesterday that he passed something last Friday that was very important to him. He had aged out from the young Republicans. He moved up, and so I think we ought to go back a few days and wish my seatmate John Hardestu a happy birthday.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Durham, Representative Hawkins, rise?
Point of personal privilege.
The gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I know that many of you, especially those who are fall football fans, realize that it is homecoming season. And so just a few weeks ago in Elizabeth City, North Carolina, they had a incredible reunion of Vikings who returned post-COVID to show their Viking pride. Then last week, there was a homecoming in Greensboro. I didn't go. I don't think you missed much. I heard that it's a pretty average homecoming. They call it the greatest. But if you happen to be in Durham this weekend at North Carolina Central University, it is the ultimate homecoming experience. And I ask that each of you, you're welcome to come and welcome to enjoy and be a part of the festivities of the homecoming experience that is ultimate. Also, I want to make sure that everyone knows, you know, I'm an HBCU champion. The Elizabeth City State University Vikings played North Carolina State University last night and held their own in PCPNC Arena. For any NC State fans, the Vikings are waiting for that rematch. And they also, this coming weekend on Friday, will take on the University of North Carolina Chapel Hill Tar Heels. So we look forward to an incredible game for those HBCUs. But lastly, and most importantly, I was not in the chamber when it was time to share that my seatmate had turned a year younger. And so we know her as the feisty Representative Candy Smith from Pitt County. It's someone who will go toe-to-toe with the devil if he was in front of her. And so I want to ask you to stand and wish my seatmate, Candy Smith, a belated happy birthday.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Beaufort, Representative Kidwell, rise?
Point of personal privilege.
The gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just wanted to ask for the prayers of the members, as a very good friend of mine just a great leader in the political world. 3rd Congressional District GOP Chairman Dave Wickersham will be going in for open heart surgery on Thursday. Keep Dave and his family in your prayers, if you would.
Sure, thank you. For what purpose does the gentleman from Wake, Representative John, rise?
Point of personal privilege.
The gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members, while we were debating this afternoon, I received a text message with an attached ultrasound video, and two of my three children have presented us with grandchildren. This particular video is from my son and daughter-in-law up in Virginia, who are expecting their first child. Everything looks great on the ultrasound. Thank you.
Congratulations, Representative John. For what purpose the lady from Wake, Representative Ball, rise?
Question of the chair.
Please recognize.
Thank you. In mentioning our schedule for Thursday being an early session, was that to indicate the thinking that we may not have votes on Friday?
That's the plan at this point.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, it looks like we could stay unless we run into an issue where something gets amended by one of the chambers and there needs to be a concurrence vote or something. Everything right now should keep us on track. So the plan right now is tomorrow morning session we'll be voting not on any maps. We'll just be voting on the two conference reports I referenced earlier. There's also that additional conference report about the UI issue. So those, Chair's not aware of anything else for that, but those would be that. Then there's a GovOps meeting from, I believe, 10 till 1, and then the redistricting committee is going to be meeting tomorrow and would be taking up, I'll let the redistricting chair announce which maps they are taking up tomorrow afternoon. But they're going to try to get committee done tomorrow afternoon after session, and then that would allow the bills to be on the floor on Thursday. I think the Senate map right now, we want to try to find a way to get it done in committee tomorrow as well so that we can vote on it on Thursday as well. So that's the plan. For what purpose the lady from New Hanover, Representative Butler, rise?
Point of personal privilege.
The lady has four.
For the first time in Wake Forest University history, the Demon Deacons are 8-0. Now, this doesn't happen very often, Mr. Speaker. In fact, never. They are also ranked 9. I'm sorry, Representative Zoka. I know 56 points from the cadets at West Point isn't good, but 70 points from the Demon Deacons was a little bit better. In any case, my father played football at Wake Forest University back when there were leather helmets and no masks, and so he's very proud, and so am I, to be a Demon Deacon. So go Deeks!
Chair will point out that when the Tar Heels were discussed, the applause were much louder.
Mr. Speaker.
I need the lady to yield. For what purpose does the lady...
I probably will today, Mr. Speaker. I think we meet you on Saturday, do we not? This Saturday is the matchup, I think, between Carolina and the Demon Deacons, so.
I think that's correct.
Could we have a little $5 friendly wager? Is that appropriate?
Yeah. I don't ever want my colleagues to feel bad and be shorted on things, but Representative Richardson will step in there. And,
right.
He's got his wallet out right now, so there you go.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Speaker.
What purpose the jump from Gastonville to Torbett Rise?
I think the sports betting bill is up for discussion today.
Noted. Special message from the Senate. The clerk will read.
Special message from the Senate. Mr. Speaker, it is ordered that the message be sent to the House of Representatives with the information that the Senate failed to concur with Senate Bill 311, House Committee Substitute Number 2, 5th Edition, a bill to be entitled an act prohibiting membership waiting period for eligible employees under the Local Governmental Employees Retirement System, updating the Volunteer Fire Department Fund matching requirements, and giving the Board of Trustees the Local Governmental Employees Retirement System the discretionary authority to provide one-time pension supplement for its members, and request conferees the President Pro Tem appoints Senator Jackson Chair, Senators Corbin, Edwards, and Blue on the part of the Senate to confer with the like committee appointed by your honor, provided at the end that the differences arising may be resolved. Respectfully, Sarah Holland, Principal Clerk.
Noted, and the chair appoints the following conferees to the bill. Representative McNeil, Representative Howard, co-chairs, members Representative Humphrey, Representative Ray. The Senate will be so notified. Also, for those conferees who were just appointed, if you would please stick around, the conference report should be ready for you to sign in about 30 minutes. The chair has been informed. For what purpose does the gentleman from Duplin, Representative Dixon, rise?
Point of privilege.
The gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This may be the only time, and certainly it's the first time this year in this session, that Representative Butler and I are on the same team. And I just want to inform the Speaker that I played on the football team at Wake Forest when we beat Carolina 3 years in a row with Brian Piccolo.
Mr. Speaker.
I was just gonna ask Representative Dixon, did they keep the score on an abacus at that time? I was just curious if they.
Mr. Speaker, may I make an inquiry?
They kept it, but they had the score posted on time.
For what? All right. The chair thanks former chairman Representative Dixon for pointing that out. For what purpose does the lady from New Hanover, Representative Butler, rise?
Inquiry of Representative Pittman. I mean, excuse me. No. The Wake Forest University player
over
there. That
would be Representative Dixon.
Dixon.
Would Representative Dixon Pittman yield? He yields.
I yield.
What year did you play, sir?
Don't ask me hard questions.
Well, I want to know if you know my father.
I graduated in 1967.
Okay, he's a little older than you are. Good.
I graduated in 68, I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Y'all want to discuss anything else about Wake Forest while we're here? I forget where I was now. How about this? Gentleman from Caldwell, Representative Hall, is recognized for a motion.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House to now adjourn to reconvene Wednesday, November 3rd at 9 a.m., subject to the standard stipulation set forth in Rule 15.1.
Representative Hall moves, seconded by Representative Eiler, that the House do now adjourn to reconvene Wednesday, November 3rd at 9 a.m., subject to the standard stipulation set forth in Rule 15.1. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it, and the House stands adjourned.
Special message from the Senate. The following special message received from the Senate. Senate Bill 740, first edition, a bill to be entitled an act to realign the congressional districts for the following districts following the return of the 2021 federal decennial census. And this bill, having been read a first time, Senate Bill 740 is referred to the Committee on Redistricting. Representative McNeil is recognized to send forth a conference report, Senate Bill 311, to the President of the Senate, the Speaker of the House of Representatives. The conference is appointed to resolve the differences between the Senate and the House of Representatives on Senate Bill 311, a bill to be entitled an act prohibiting membership waiting periods for eligible employees under the local governmental employees retirement system, updating the volunteer fire department fund matching requirements, and giving the Board of Trustees of the local governmental employees retirement system the discretionary authority to provide one-time pension supplements to its members. House Committee Substitute Favorable 8-18-2021. House Committee Substitute Number 2 Favorable 10-20-21. Fifth Edition Gross 10-20-21. Submit the following report. The Senate and the House of Representatives agree to the following amendments to the House Committee Substitute Favorable 8-18-21. House Committee Substitute Number 2 Favorable 10-21. 10-20-21, 5th edition of Gross 10-20-21, and the Senate concurs in the committee substitute as amended on page 1, line 8, by rewriting that line to read members and to reduce the SUTA tax rate for 2022, and on page 3, lines 15 and 16, by rewriting the lines to read section 4, notwithstanding General Statute 96-9, the base contribution rate determined by General Statute 96-9.2 for the experienced rated employer will remain at the 1/9% for the 2022 calendar year. Section 5, Sections 1 and 2 of this Act become effective December 1st, 2021. The remainder of this Act is effective when it becomes law. The conferees recommend that the Senate and the House of Representatives adopt this report. Date conferees approved report November 2nd, 2021. Conferees for the Senate, Senator Brent Jackson, Chair, and Senators Corbin, Edwards, and Blue. Conferees for the House of Representatives, Alan McNeil, Chair, and Representatives Chris Humphrey and Michael H. Ray. The Chair rules the conference report material constituting the first reading, and pursuant to Rule 44D, the bill is placed on the calendar of November 3rd. Special message from the Senate, Senate Chamber, November 2nd, 2021. Mr. Speaker, it is ordered that a message be sent to the House of Representatives with information that the Senate adopts the report of the conferees for Senate Bill 183, Conference Committee Substitute, a bill to be entitled an act to eliminate the mandatory waiting periods for driver's license restoration or limited driving privileges if the person is operating a motor vehicle that has a functioning ignition interlock system installed on it. At all when the appropriate action has been taken by both chambers, the bill will be ordered enrolled. Respectfully, Sarah Holland, Principal Clerk of the Senate, noted. Special message from the Senate, Senate Chamber, November 2nd, 2021. Mr. Speaker, it is ordered the message be sent to the House of Representatives with the information that the Senate failed to concur in Senate Bill 308, House Committee Substitute Fourth Edition, bill to be entitled an act to prevent delay in the issuance of temporary certificates of occupancy to clarify electrical writing requirement references to modify one or two family dwelling residential development fire apparatus access road requirements and to expand authority to counties to sell abandoned cemeteries. Respectfully, Sarah Holland, Principal Clerk of the Senate. That Senate message is noted. And the following special message is received from the Senate. House Bill 814, Senate Committee Substitute Third Edition, bill to be entitled an act to authorize the operation of neighborhood occupantless vehicles for concurrence in the Senate Committee Substitute. And House Bill 814, Senate Committee Substitute, is placed on the calendar pursuant to Rule 36B for tomorrow, November 3rd.